Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
From Fomentabout. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, March 2nd. This is the 98th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a top tea curator. I will introduce him in a moment. First, as we do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speedrun game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to never settle. Always push to excel and reach new goals. Don't be satisfied with average or the status quo. Strive to be your best self and achieve greatness. We can always do better. So I say settle, schmettle. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very happy to have my guest here. It is Jeff Ruiz. He is the head captain and tea curator at Atera, a 2-Michelin-star restaurant in Tribeca in New York City. Jeff was a core member of the opening team at Atera with Chef Matthew Leitner, earning those 2 stars within the first 6 months of operation. His tea service includes teas representative of the classic tea regions that are prepared accordingly to their origin. I was going to say region, but origin. So, welcome, Jeff.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today.
I'm excited to have you and learn about you and tea.
I'm excited to talk about it and love tea.
So, how did you get into the industry?
It's a long story. I started in high school washing dishes, and you know, after high school, I really wanted to. I had higher ambitions than washing dishes.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in upstate New York in Buffalo, or right outside Buffalo.
Got it.
Yeah. And so, that was my first exposure to restaurants.
It's important, the dishwasher.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. To this day, I love talking to the guys that, probably relate to them more than the... I would otherwise, because I've been in their shoes.
Right. And it's a good experience.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So out of high school, I really wanted to move to New York and study in New York and go to college in New York. So I moved to New York, started studying international relations and political science. But there was a part of me that also, really loved restaurants and dining. But I'd never been exposed to the dining scene in New York City. And just even walking past different restaurants in New York City, seeing these dining rooms, I was kind of taken back by the level that there was in the city. So during my summer of between my freshman and sophomore year, I had there was one restaurant in particular that I thought was stunning and I wanted to be a part of, and I wanted to learn the trade within this environment, and that was Café des Artistes.
Nice.
That was before they had done the renovation.
That's on 6th Avenue, is that where we're talking about?
I believe it's 64th or 65th between Central Park West.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was mixing. Yes, that is where it is.
classic New York City restaurant, and the dining room was absolutely stunning, and I walked in cold, asked the GM if I could work there for free to learn the trade, how to be on the floor. And he said, no, do you have any New York City experience? I'm like, no. He said, no. And, you know, he said no three times. I'd gone back repeatedly. And then he finally said, okay, come on board. And so that started a journey over the last 10 years of, you know, working in different parts of the hospitality industry within New York City. After Café des Artistes, I had worked with, you know, in the Keith McNally group, and then went on to work at a Restaurant Daniel. And fast forward to 2012, I had an offer to start working at Atera.
So what were your roles there? Were you on the in front of the house? Were you a server? Were you
at Café des Artistes?
At when? Well, from Café des Artistes to moving to through the lineup and then being at Daniel. And I remember the ambiance at Café des Artistes, and it's charming and beautiful and special. So I could see why you were drawn to that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, start from the bottom, busser. you know, busser doing your thing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So fast forward, when did you start getting into tea?
Getting into tea, so...
Miss a step between, like, were you, when you were, let's say, at Daniel, were you intrigued by tea at all, or were you more just, you know, head down doing your job and into service, or
I was pretty shocked at...
Yeah.
Being there was a shocking experience in terms of being thrown into the upper echelon of service.
Right.
And it's there where I learned all the rules and the classic rules. And, you know, you got exposure to different areas of a beverage and other aspects of food that I hadn't been exposed to before. But tea hadn't caught on to me yet. It wasn't until I started at Atera that I was really started to be drawn to tea.
And how did you get involved with the opening team at Atera?
There was a gentleman who I worked with at Daniel who had reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to be part of this opening team. And, you know, I came in for a trail, and basically ended up getting hired that day and just started working from that day on forward. It was very quick. It was, you know, came in, joined the team, boom. And it was like lightning pace from that point forward. You know, everyone came in. Everyone in the industry came in. It was a really energizing and environment to be in.
Well, everyone came in. I came in.
You did, yeah, absolutely. You did.
But no, I did go in, and I mean, for people that don't know, maybe we should talk about Atera, like the type of restaurant it is, because it's a very original space. It's an open kitchen. It's extremely intimate and special. I mean, those are the words I would use. But how would you describe it?
I would describe it as a restaurant aiming to do everything it does at the highest level in the United States it can. It's aiming for the very, very top. From every product it brings in to things that would normally be overlooked, like tea.
So that's a good segue into how you got into tea. So it was at Atera that you became more interested, or you were put in charge of the tea program? How did it
Happened is I was actually dating my high school sweetheart at the time, who is from Sri Lanka.
Ah.
A very, you know, that country produces a tremendous amount of tea that's put out. And, you know, I'd never been with somebody or seen somebody who drank as much tea as her. So, you know, there was a part of me that wanted to understand that and her, like, heritage, where she came from. And also, you know, as someone in the hospitality industry, we're naturally inquisitive, especially about things that involve the natural environment. You know, for instance, you know, why does a wine from a particular vineyard have a characteristic that one from an adjacent vineyard doesn't have? So, you know, just little questions like that. And, you know, I had never really asked myself what tea was exactly. And, you know, I saw her drinking tea, and I was like, I was familiar with, you know, these are household terms, green, black, maybe oolong. But it didn't take a really intensive search to, you know, find out that, you know, tea is, at the very base, tea is from the Camellia sinensis plant. It's from one plant. And there's a key distinction to be made between that and... essentially tisanes that are made from other plants steeped in hot water. So there was that kind of like brewing or steeping, if you will, in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I came to Oterra, I saw the programs that they had, incredible ambitions, you know, the sommelier at the time, the beverage director was like, you know, we're going to have the best half bottle list in the country. You know, the cheese program was very ambitious. You know, the products that were brought into house were the best you can possibly get. And but, you know, at the same time, I saw that tea maybe had been put on the wayside. And that was understandable. You know, there was a lot of work. There's a ton of work, tremendous amount of work that goes into opening a restaurant. And there were only maybe five of us involved in the opening, the GM, the sommelier, slash beverage director, the captain, the maitre d', and myself. You know, so there was a good amount of work to go around. And, yeah, there was part of me that said, you know, if you're going to do every program at the highest level, then tea is something that I think deserves a closer look. And so, you know, I was about to approach the general manager at the time and ask him if I could look into this and pursue it as... its own distinct program. And he ended up coming to me and saying, you know, we want to do better tea. And he had come from 11 Madison Park, a place that has an incredible tea program. So it was only natural that there was this idea in the back of his head that Oterra should also have a tea program that was world class.
Makes sense. So how did you go about doing this?
So once I got the reins to do it, I reached out to Sebastian and Anna at In Pursuit of Tea and actually showed up to they had a shop on Crosby Street. I just showed up one day and said, you know, I want to do a tea program, but I don't know where to start. Can you give me advice? And it was that day that Anna prepared a oolong for me called Oriental Beauty that completely like warped my mind on what tea could be. It was multi-dimensional. It had a lingering finish that went on and on and on, and the I had never experienced tea that way before. And not only was the experience on the palate unlike anything I had experienced, it was the preparation as well. It was participatory and it was intimate.
How participatory?
When you're preheating the teaware, you dump out the water, you put the tea leaf in, and you've looked at the tea leaf before that's done, and you've brought it up and you smelled it, and you know there's something there. But once you put the tea leaf into the teaware after it's been preheated, and close it and then reopen it and bring that to examine its aroma, it's like an open book. It just opens up and it's there's that, you know, that's like step one. And I thought to myself, wow, Oterra is a place that could really introduce this as an aspect of the dining experience. And that was a launching point.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. No, and just I feel your passion for it. I'm getting excited about tea. Not awesome. Like I wasn't, but I'm getting more excited about it. So let's take a little break here and then come back and we'll talk more about how Oterra's tea program came to be.
Awesome.
More. Okay. Stay with us. It's all in the industry on Heritage Radio Network.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
In the whole world.
Okay, hi, we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Jeff Ruiz, the tea curator at Otera. And yes, we're talking about tea. I'm talking about how I feel I know nothing about tea anymore, even though I drink it. You know, and maybe it's also, you know, the tea has, I think, become so far. And I think in growing up, or maybe it's old school American culture, it was Lipton. It was just, mm-hmm. that was what tea was. It was one bag that you could get, and then they came out with a decaf, and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a much more complicated beverage, right?
It is. It's kind of like a rabbit hole. You know, when you're exposed to something that, you know, you grew up with, and it's sort of like an afterthought. You know, you enjoy it. But anything you do in life, you know, once you dig a little deeper, you find that there's 1,000 questions that, you know, you need to answer. And that, for me, that was tea. And, you know, most of the things that you get in, you know, Lipton tea bags are essentially the bottom of the barrel. It's like the dust at the that's left over from the good stuff.
Right.
All right, and you know, it's passable, it's good enough, and you know, you put some milk in it, you put some sugar in it, and it's
exactly.
I won't lie, it tastes mm-hmm. good. You know, that's the tea I grew up with, and I enjoy it. But there's more to it.
There is more to it, and so at Otera with the Matthew Leitner was the original chef, mm-hmm. and so how did you work with Matthew on creating a tea pairing menu, or even bringing teas in that would just complement the food, but or. I mean, was it, I don't know, when did the tea pairing program start?
The tea pairing, I say it started with a hunch in 2013.
And when did Otera open?
2012.
Okay.
So the next year, we had a really amazing beverage director, Scott Cameron, who was intent on having a pairing that was based on beverages that would pair best with the food rather than strictly wine. So, you know, we referred to it as a beverage pairing as opposed to a wine pairing. So he was kind of unconventional in that sense. You know, he would, and he had a really open, how do you say, you know, he could use anything.
Right.
And, you know, one day he came to me, he's like, you know, I think I want to do a tea with this dish. And it was a foie gras with matsutake mushroom, pickled blueberry, and pine nuts. And, you know, we started brainstorming on, like, what we could do. And he came pretty much to a conclusion that, you know, maybe we should do rooibos, which is not from the classic tea plant, or we should do Phoenix honey orchid, which is an oolong from Guangdong province. And I urged him. I was like, you need to go with the Phoenix honey orchid. You have to go with the Phoenix honey orchid. It's going to have more backbone. It's has more of a story to tell in relation to, to say anything yeah. about rooibos, but, you know,
yeah.
it's got...
You had your reasons.
Yeah. And he ended up going with it. And it was amazing. So it was a few, maybe a couple months later... Eric Asimov, the New York Times wine writer, came in and was doing a story on pairings with tasting menus. And he ended up, you know, mentioning the tea that he had that night with Scott's beverage pairing. And you know, he wrote very favorably of it. And that was like a green light.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, this is something that has legs. You know, this is kind of a blessing that, you know, go with this.
Right.
There's more to it than, you know, maybe just having one dish paired with tea. So moving forward to 2014, we started doing tea pairings with the tasting menu?
Well, I came in last year with now Ronnie Emberg, the chef. Mm-hmm. So I didn't experience the tea pairing with Matthew Leitner. And I don't, it's a question I have with working with two different chefs and different menus. Did you, was there a big change in what happened, and how was it working between the two of them? But just my experience was, I was blown away by the tea pairing, and I'd never done a tasting menu tea pairing before, and I don't drink alcohol, so I usually don't get a pairing opportunity.
Yeah.
And I was just fascinated because the flavors of the dishes, they changed sometimes, and it really worked, and it was they complemented each other. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, I was just fascinated, and I was like, you had to come on my show at some point and talk about this. And so I just threw a lot out there. But working with the two different chefs, and how do you do it? How do you, because they're also creating this, I think now it's 18 course menu that he's doing, or is it not that much?
It's about 18, yeah.
Okay, so that's a lot of courses, like.
So there's a few things you need to balance. First, the thing that both of them gave me was complete autonomy to do, be as ambitious as he wanted to, and just go for it. And
that's
that,
great.
Yeah, having that from a chef is really special. Yeah. So that was the first step. The second step was, tasting through the menu, getting brainstorming what you think the tea is going to go, which teas might go well with which dishes, and then having them, maybe make it for you again, and going through that whole process of just tasting over and over again and being like, okay, this works, this doesn't work, this works, this doesn't work. So they were both very open to that process.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many teas are you doing? It was like, I don't know, 7 or 8?
At that time, it was 6 or so.
Okay.
So that one of the things you got to balance with doing a tea pairing with a tasting menu is, one, how intense do you want, or how focused do you want to be on the service? Because if I do it for one person, say I do a tasting menu for just a single individual, I could pair teas with all 18 items. But you also have to balance that, and your show is about all in the industry, kind of giving a backdoor scene into mm-hmm. how things work. You have to balance that ideal with the service of the whole restaurant. Because if you do that when you have 18 guests, you're entirely off the floor. The service is going to sink.
Right.
So you figure out how to bridge pairings. So the way we did it with the tea program is, with Ronnie and with Chef Leitner, mm-hmm. there's, a snack portion. So that's an opportunity to bridge courses. And different items on the menu kind of sing or, resonate with different dishes much more than others. So, you bring that to the guest's attention, like, this is where it's really going to hit. And It works,
and there's presentation involved. There's hot teas, there's cold teas. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend anyone to do it. How many people do the tea pairing compared to the wine pairing?
So we do two sittings a night, 6 p.m. and 9:30. And on a given night, you'll get one person each seating getting the tea pairing, or two people each seating getting the tea pairing. Sometimes you get hit hard and you get four people in one seating, or five people.
Whole restaurant after this show.
Oh boy, yeah. That's like, going through a service when you have like five tea pairings or six tea pairings at the same time, you're it's working hard. Really hard. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, at the end of that service, I'm like, man, this is a dream come true.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
What about sourcing your teas? Where are they coming from?
The teas we source, and this is part of one of the ethos that I went into the petit program with, is sourcing from multiple people that import and sell. And Now, you know, in pursuit of tea, we do kettle. We do tea urchin. They're based in China. Tea company. And the reasoning behind that was early on, I saw when I was first looking into, you know, how to even do a tea program, I noticed that most every restaurant in the U.S. that did a tea program, they used one importer.
Yeah,
and
it seems what
that's
I
good, you know.
Yeah,
but you don't do that with your produce. You don't do that with your wine program. You don't do that with your liquor program. Why would you do that with your tea program?
Good point.
You know, it's important to taste the palate of other people importing, multiple people importing. And so that was one of the things that I really want to expand upon. And you know, it was a story in Eater, I think, in 2014. And
I read it. It's a great article.
After
on
that,
the tea?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. After that, now other restaurants started working with multiple tea importers. It's because they're like, it makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
And we were talking before the show how I went into Tay Company and I met Elena and Frederick and told them about this show, and they were lovely, and they made me oolong tea and were teaching me about that because, there's a lot of, I think, are you seeing, I mean, you're seeing it in the restaurants, but I think in general seeing more people get into tea, and there seems to be a trend too with the matcha, a lot of matcha.
Oh, yeah, that's... It's funny. I was with Sebastian this morning, and we were at the Atera doing a tasting for the cooks in the kitchen. And, you know, one of the questions that Ronnie brought up was, why is matcha, like, such a trend? And there's a... It's funny. You know, matcha is green tea, and a lot of people will go towards matcha because it's green tea and because they say it's healthy. A draw to that. But there's multiple ways that you can approach matcha. It's been done in Japan for over 900 years, and there's a whole tea ceremony that goes alongside it. So some people approach it from, you know, a Zen Buddhist aspect. And when they approach it from that aspect, maybe they don't look into so much of the health benefits of it. So different people approach matcha for different reasons. It's definitely a trend.
Yes.
And it's a huge trend.
It is a huge trend. I like matcha.
Oh, I love matcha. Yeah. Absolutely. And it is good for you, and it works. I think it works far more effective than coffee. And it's the staff beverage at Atera. We make 3 liters of matcha a day for the staff to drink to get them, you know, alert and productive through service.
Not a bad place to work.
No, it's pretty awesome.
Also, yeah, just even on your website, which is great, the photos that you're showing behind the scenes and communal table with your staff meal and just little peeks at it. I enjoyed seeing that. Now, before we take a break, I have a question from last week on episode 97. Brett Friedman of Agency 21 Consulting, he asked, "What's your model and main points of differentiation?" When he was talking about, like, he's seeing the tea trend. Is it trying to replicate this craze that's happened with coffee? And I feel we might have kind of touched on a bunch of this, but do you have any thing to add about?
Absolutely. There are definitely parallels. I mean, the wording is a little tricky because he says trying to replicate, which
right.
almost implies that, you know, tea importers or sellers are all of a sudden on a bandwagon to sell tea for the sole reason of replicating the success of coffee, therefore, you know, we're going to be more profitable. But there's definitely some distinctions to be made, particularly about the beverage itself. I'd say there's more parallels with what's happening with tea right now and what happened with wine in the United States in the 60s and 70s and the maturity that America approached wine. And furthermore, I mean, coffee and tea as distinct beverages. If I made a pour over for you of a coffee from Kenya, one from Guatemala, one from Panama, maybe an Esmeralda, one from Colombia, and had put a blindfold on you and asked you to taste them and asked you what you were drinking, you know, the one thing you'd be able to answer is, I'm drinking coffee. If I did the same thing with tea, put a blindfold on you and made you a tea from Guangdong province, made you a tea from Japan, made you a tea from Taiwan, and then made you a tea from Sri Lanka, I would be hard-pressed to convince you they were all from the same plant.
Interesting. Yeah. And you do blind taste tests with your staff? I read that. Is that true?
Yeah, we've done it. It's pretty fun. You know, a lot of the guys, you know, just... We make a lot of tea at Aterra, and, you know, oftentimes from getting samples in and, you know, learning about different teas that, you know, my importers are bringing in, I'll blind taste that with different staff members and ask them, you know, where it's from, what's the style. And, yeah, they've gotten a lot better. It's amazing, like, the ability for them to blind taste. It's pretty, pretty amazing. On top of that, you know, we've done, you know, we did a really beautiful series of classes, Tea Tuesdays, where we invited the front of house and the back of house to come in, and then I would give a course on a particular region, or it was a tea style. Maybe we do a horizontal of different teas from Guangdong province in the Phoenix Mountains, or we would do a horizontal of Darjeeling First Flush, or, you know, from different producers in Darjeeling. And yeah, it's pretty fun to host something like that.
Yes, and I think I if you haven't already, you should have a hashtag for Tea Tuesdays. You can take over from Taco Tuesdays. How about that?
We have a new... Sounds good.
Okay. All right, we're going to take another break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to do my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest is Jeff Ruiz. It is time for my speed round game. What this is I name a couple of things, and you just pick your preference. They're like either or questions. Okay, so here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out. I can't make sushi myself, and I can't eat enough sushi.
I hear you. Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Beer.
Guess I should have thrown tea in there, but I didn't.
That's fine. You probably could have guessed beer because I have a tendency to like things that have a bitter touch to it.
Okay. We'll go with beer. Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Oh, that's funny because we do all-inclusive, but I'm a fan of both. It's hard to say, but I prefer myself, even if service is included, to say thank you in the form of tipping the staff.
Yes. I hear you on that, too. Okay, how about communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Iced matcha or iced coffee?
Iced matcha.
Tea pairing or temperance pairing?
Oh, tea pairing. You're asking the wrong guy.
Well,
you could bring Nick Duble on the program and ask him, and he'll.
I feel at some point I need to go back to Aterra and do the temperance pairing because I was tempted which one to do. I'm glad I did the tea one, but the temperance, which is the non-alcoholic beverages, would be interesting, I think, as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the really interesting thing about Ronnie is that, you know, you mentioned you don't drink.
Yes.
He doesn't drink very much at all.
Ah. Good to know.
Also unique from a chef.
There's a few out there.
Yeah,
and I learn on this show, too, others that don't drink. And it's nice we have a small community.
So, yeah. So it's only, you know, it's only natural for him to, you know, have something as ambitious as what we do with the temperance pairing and what we do with the tea pairing. It just makes sense to have, because if he were in the guest shoes, he would want one of those options.
Yeah, no, I'm excited you guys do it. Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Lived in both boroughs. I'm going to go Manhattan because that's where I fell in love with New York.
All right, that's a good reason. And that's the game.
Excellent.
So now we talk some industry news. So today came out in the New York Times, restaurant review by Pete Wells was of Boulé in Tribeca, your neighbor. Says Boulé in Tribeca still goes its own way seductively. Gave it 3 stars, which was the same rating that Frank Bruni gave it in 2009. So it holds its status. I had dinner there for the first time, believe it or not, about 2 years ago for my birthday, and it was so lovely. It's such a special restaurant, and it's there aren't that many restaurants with the same style and sophistication doing what they're doing anymore, I think, in general. So
absolutely. Yeah, they are old school, and that's, you know, New York and anywhere you go, whether it's, you know, Paris or London, you need that base. Someone that does it that hasn't changed.
Yes.
Because all of us are so hungry for change, but we need to be reminded and enjoy what is there that's classic.
Yes.
And elegant.
Yeah, and David Boulé is, I mean, he's very experienced and well-received, I think, as a chef, and doesn't go... You know, the article was saying he doesn't really follow trends, and he just does his thing. Mm-hmm. The only thing it noted was on their bread cart that he does have some gluten-free options.
Yeah.
But that bread cart in itself is incredible. I think they're... I mean, they wheel that by you. There must be, like, 20 different types of breads.
Mm.
It's an impressive cart.
Wow. Yeah, the... It's really important for there to be chefs that are just anybody, you know, beverage professional chefs that don't chase trends. And the ones that are most successful are the ones that don't chase trends. It's easy to see on social media, you know, another chef or another restaurant starting to do something and then wanting to gravitate towards doing something similar because you think it might be trendy. But in my experience, just following your gut and doing it because you love it is far more important, and that's what he does.
Yes, I agree. Do you guys have crossover between your guests, or is there any communication? Because you're pretty close to each other, location-wise, Otera and...
Oh, Lake. Between us and...
Yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking you're both down in Tribeca, you're both... fine dining experiences, but very different as well. I mean, they have a tasting menu, but it's I think it's 3 or 6 courses, and it's just a different style restaurant.
It's a different game. For guests that come into Otera, they usually their inclination isn't to mention Boulé because there's not a comparison, because it is so distinctly different. So even if there is crossover, I guess, we don't really hear it. We hear more, you know, a comparison to, you know, Brooklyn Fair, or, you know, we hear comparisons to 11 Madison Park or Per Se.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that I could see that. So, okay. Well, congratulations to them. It was a good review.
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful.
Okay, the other article I have was on Grub Street. Inside the Collapse of Fairway, New York's Favorite Failing Grocery Store, by Hannah Howard. And this was interesting because Hannah apparently worked at Fairway, so it was an insider's look at what was happening with them. And, I mean, this doesn't sound good. You know, Fairway initially opened in 1933, its Upper West Side location, and it was a pioneer in very rare ingredients that have become a little more commonplace now. But just talking about that, they rapidly expanded, I think, around 2011, and now they have 15 locations. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was just they're not doing so well, and they're I don't know. I was a little sad. I was sad reading this, but what are your thoughts?
I read it. I was pretty sad, too. And Fairway was one of those places I came to. It was like this amazing grocery store when I moved to New York for the first time. I went there. I was like, oh, my God, this place is got everything.
And it's a little insane with the crowds as well.
Yeah. You know, going there, you know, walking past it on the Upper West Side, you know, it's a scene. It's pretty amazing. But reading the article, something I gleaned from it was obviously the expansion, but what set them apart before was their specialization in different products. And I can only, it seems logical that you can't specialize and expand at that rate at the same time and expect to do it at a very high level.
Yeah, well, it seems...
Because, I mean, I remember reading that, you know, it was hard to get people that were trained properly in the new locations.
Yeah, training and having the leadership is something it noted as well. I think they, you know, I think it's hard when you're used to running one place. I mean, they had a very slow expansion at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It said they, you know, they first opened the place up in Harlem, and then it was like another 6 years later they opened in Red Hook, and they were slow at expanding, and then they rapidly did it. And I think, yeah, I think that's hard to get the right staffing and know the markets even that you're going in. Mm-hmm. But I think the brand is strong. I mean, yeah, if you live in New York or even you don't, you know Fairway. And,
oh, yeah. And it's packed. I mean, whenever I go to the one, I only know the one on the Upper East Side and the Upper West Side, and whenever I go, it's packed.
Yeah.
So I was actually surprised when I read this that they, you know, when they expanded, the other locations weren't doing very well.
Yeah, this is the first article I saw on it, too, and it's a good read. I mean, they were talking also how they went public and, you know.
The private equity.
Yeah.
Private equity came in and started investing in it.
So, I don't know. At the end, it said, the insiders say the only way is to restructure and close some locations. I mean, I don't know if they're going to do that or, you know, we'll see. But yeah, Fairway's awesome.
Yeah, I love them. It's not my local grocery store right now, but, you know, if I could make it my local grocery store, it would be my first choice.
Yeah, it's not, I'm not too, I don't live too far from there, but it's not... I don't know. I go to Columbus Circle, and Whole Foods is closer to me, and I don't tend to go uptown. But I think the key to going to Fairway is going at an off hour, because anytime I have gone, it's busy, and you kind of got to know your way around.
Oh, yeah. And to say that you want, you'd prefer to go to Whole Foods, which is also insane.
Yes, but I know it now. You're right. It is, but my plan on that is I try to go in off hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when
That's
I...
a strategy.
It is. I have a strategy because when I don't do the strategy and I end up there, you know, at 6 o'clock on a Sunday, it's a bad call. So, and that's also another thing they point in the article that, you know, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, and there is more competition out there.
Yeah. You know, they mentioned it was easier for... smaller, even little bodegas to get these small little, you know, specialty ingredients that you used to only be able to get a Fairway.
Yeah, so, okay. Well, wish them the best.
Absolutely.
And we take one more break. I'm going to come back and do my solo dining experience. It's All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience, which this week is at Pau by Paul Key. Here's the rundown. The location, 3201 Collins Avenue at the Faina Hotel in Miami Beach, Florida. The concept, it's a chic hotel eatery with ocean views, ritzy decor, and modern Asian cuisine. The chef is Paul Key. He's a Filipino chef who's known for his restaurant Key in Austin, Texas, as well as Eastside King food trucks. And he's also going to be opening Otoko Sushi Counter. He's a busy guy. Now, why did I go? Well, I was down in Miami for South Beach Wine and Food Festival, and Paul is an acclaimed young chef who I've met briefly at events. My experience. So I took a seat at the bar. I chatted up with the friendly bartenders who helped me decide what to order. At one point, Paul was standing by the bar in the dining room and I was able to say hello. It was a beautiful and comfortable setting. What did I get? I had the Toro Binchotan, grilled greens, and peanut gazpacho. The latter two were very highly recommended by my bartender duo. My take, the grilled Toro seared on white charcoal was lovely, and the grilled greens, which came while I was still enjoying the Toro, tasted like a burger, literally. Now, this threw me off at first, but then it grew on me, and the more I ate, the more I appreciated its originality and unique flavor profile. I'm thinking, do a tea pairing with that. There was also a peanut soup, which was kindly sent out to me from the bartenders. It was very rich, creamy, and delicious. The scene was friends and daters, the perfect for an intimate dinner. Interesting tidbit, Paul Key has received many accolades. He's won a James Beard Award, Best New Chef by Food & Wine, Esquire Chef of the Year, and he is the winner of Top Chef Season 9. Not too shabby. Personal fun fact, when I arrived at the hotel, I checked out the Alinea pop-up happening on the other side of the hotel. It was fun to see their dining room in action and see Gary Obligation, the director of operations for Alinea, who I know, and he kindly escorted me over to Pau. The cost was $55, including tax and an 18% service charge. Would I go back? Yes. Their website is faina.com. Yeah, it's interesting they're doing this pop-up down there, Alinea. Probably maybe you get compared to them, too.
You didn't have a chance to...
I didn't get to dine there, but as I looked in the dining room, I saw the... I've eaten at Alinea in Chicago, and I saw the balloon they have that as one of their things. Yeah. So I saw that in the room. So I think they're doing some of their similar tricks.
Awesome.
Okay, so it's time for the final question. So next week, my guests are Catherine Sheldon and Lauren Scala, producer and host of New York Live on NBC. So, Jeff, can you ask them a question?
Yeah. Where is their favorite place in the city to get a cup of tea?
Oh, that's a great question.
Whether it's a restaurant or a tea shop or, you know, maybe they're doing, you know, like a high tea service or something along those lines.
It's great because they cover New York City really well and they get introduced to the best of the best. So,
yeah, I'd be interested to hear if they, you know, if they mentioned one of the, you know, the places doing, you know, matcha, exclusively matcha, or if they mentioned, you know something like Tea Company.
Yeah. I'm predicting one of them has a favorite matcha bar.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be fun.
Okay, great. So that is the show.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad I got to meet you. I'm so glad I got to do your tea pairing. It really blew my mind.
Absolutely. And hope to do it for you again.
Oh, I hope so. I look forward. So my guest today has been Jeff Ruiz. He's the tea curator at Atera. Their website is ateranyc.com and on social media at ateranyc. My social media at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. Okay, a little announcement. So tomorrow I'm heading down to Charleston Wine and Food Festival. So is the Heritage Radio Network team. Heritage Radio is doing a live broadcast on Friday and Saturday from 12 to 5. Y'all should check it out. And on Saturday at 3:15, I'm going to do a very short segment. I'm going to have Laura Kate Whitney, who's the Marketing and Communications Director for the Charleston Festival. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something at that time. And my PR friends from Bolster Media are also going to join us. So it will be a on-the-road segment of All in the Industry of some sort. So please tune in. And I'll be back next Wednesday then for another live show. So thanks again to Jeff, and thanks to my engineer, David. And thank you all for being a part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.